This exhibit is, I guess, the visible product or outcome of a project that started back in May of 1981 with a symposium which brought together 17 traditional indigenous craftsmen from these Pacific Rim areas. The exhibit that Susie Jones refers to is Pacific Basket Makers, A Living Tradition, a collection of plated, woven, bent, and twined objects made by residents of Guam, the Marianas, Samoa, California, Hawaii, and Alaska. The exhibit began a two-year tour recently, first opening at the University Museum in Fairbanks. On this Chinook, we'll hear about the symposium and the exhibit from basket makers and organizers. Susie Jones is the Traditional Native Arts Program Coordinator for the Alaska State Council on the Arts. Each of the basket makers that participated, and in some cases they were fish trap and eel trap makers, provided from two to three or four baskets, which you now see in this exhibit. And the photographs that accompany the exhibit are of the basket makers both during the symposium and also taken in their homes and in their own areas, gathering the materials, preparing the materials, and just showing some of the different environments that are, in the case of basketry, so important to the kind of basket that's made and when it's made and how it's made.
Why focus on baskets and basket makers?
Well, I think that basketry may be, if not the, one of the oldest art forms, and I'm not sure there have been any cultures ever found where basketry hasn't been a tradition, for one thing. So it is universal, and it's certainly a traditional art that you find dynamic among the cultures in the Pacific Rim. I also personally am intrigued by basketry because it's my understanding that so far, with all the technology that's come out of Western society or any other society in the world, they have not been able to invent a machine that can make a basket. So I think there's something particularly human about baskets.
There are about 50 baskets, or items that relate to baskets, in the exhibit.
They're woven containers, I guess, or sewn containers. A couple of them are fish traps. One of them is what I suppose we would call a cradle in English, meant to carry a baby. One of them is a little container woven out of coconut leaf in which rice is cooked, so it's sort of the equivalent of a pot or a pan, actually. Some of them are trays. A couple of them are even hats. They're all related and made out of similar materials, but they function much more than simply a basket as an art object. Most of them have and were intended for functions in everyday life and everyday use.
Most baskets are woven when the need arises.
Chamorro basket maker Francisco Frank Pangolinan of Guam.
I want to gather coconuts. I'll husk the coconuts and then probably sit down and weave a basket that would contain, my coconuts.
But many of Frank's pandamus and coconut leaf weavings are not strictly functional or utilitarian.
I've been experimenting with giant size and as well as miniatures. I've been trying to move away from the functional aspects of weaving and going into the ornamental and decorative aspects. So I've challenged myself into weaving a hat using the pandanus leaves that's 6 feet in diameter, and I went to the other extreme and wove miniatures of the different baskets that would be woven life-size. For some of the baskets, they still serve the purpose, but I would still think that once it serves its purpose, to have people keep the baskets and not, the traditional way of just putting them aside because it's already done its purpose. And I can't see why a basket as intricate as, with a design as that, why something like that can't be put up on a shelf or a wall, to decorate a home. And the same way with the with the miniatures, still using the traditional techniques, but yet coming up with an ornamental and not the functional utilitarian basket.
You were saying these are all out of coconut. Mm-hmm. Can you just walk up to any coconut tree and start at it?
Yeah. Well, it depends on the owner. Okay, so like I have a couple of trees behind my house, so I've almost depleted my supply, and then some of the jungle areas are usually open to everybody. People have to start planting coconuts, though, because we are running out of raw materials, and the aspiring weavers will not have their raw materials to work with. So.
You see a coconut tree, you walk up to it, then what do you do?
In essence, it's just walking up to a tree and choosing which leaf is the good or the better leaves to weave.
How do you know?
One is to look for length and width of the weave, I mean the leaf, okay? The other one is the color. If you want a longer lasting basket that would have tighter weaves, the darker green would be good. If it's something as ornamental as, you know, maybe a hat, and to play around with the colors of the coconut, the younger, lighter colored leaves would be used. It's closer to the heart of the palm, and even when picking the younger leaves, you have to be very careful not to pick the youngest, because that's, you know, well, it's like having the youngest member in your family, you know, die, you know, and it's not really a whole family, you know, as compared to maybe an elder. Tradition has it that when you go into the jungle, you try not to just, you know, hack away in trees, and, you know, and I've been trying to practice that, and, you know, choosing my leaves and not just, you know, climbing up a coconut tree and then hacking all the leaves that are outside and then, you know, getting one frond. Some people, and very unfortunately, do go into the jungles and don't climb the coconut trees and just cut the entire tree down and just get the leaves. So you have a tree that has spent 10 years growing, and, you know, somebody just comes in and cuts the entire tree down and takes two or three leaves, you know, so that's one less tree in the entire population of trees.
Aside from its usefulness for making baskets, Frank says that the coconut tree is one of the most important plants on the island of Guam.
All its parts, from the roots all the way to the leaves, are used. We make our vinegar from coconut. We make coconut milk. We make a type of molasses or honey from coconut. The trunks are used for lumber. The leaves obviously were used for a lot of the weaving of baskets, as well as thatch for the roofings, and then sidings for houses, traditional houses. The houses nowadays are, you know, modern, but every once in a while a group of people would want to construct a traditional house, and that they'll use the coconut is probably, you know, the main use of building a house and supplying the entire need of the house.
According to Susie Jones, it makes sense that the material used for a basket or a hat, when prepared differently, also provides shelter and food.
The materials used are very often materials used far more widely within the culture for a lot of other things, and are usually very important materials to the subsistence tradition within the culture.
This is a good birch. It's really, it's a waterproof basket. Basket very swift. You can keep water inside, too.
Athabascan basket maker Belle Deacon of Grayling.
That's all they used to use a long time ago. And everything, it's even pail they made out of. Canoes and everything out of birch bark. Roof and everything. They can make snowshoes out of it, and sled, and wooden spoon and everything out of birch. Very useful trees, that birch. But you can't kill it when you take the bark off, because it wouldn't die. It lived there for 100 years after. It gets so big that they grow another bark on it. Then you can cut fish on that one after you peel it.
Is it thinner bark then?
Thicker bark, and it's rough. That's a cut fish on. We call that clay. And this is clay, we call it.
For making birch bark baskets, not just any birch tree will do.
You got to have a special one. You got to hunt for it. You got to know how to do it. But if you do, if you peel any old kind, it's not good. You got to go far away from town, where you see old birch, you know, and you got those old birch there really sick, some of them. You don't bother that because it's no good. You couldn't make nothing out of it.
Belle usually camps out for 3 or 4 days when she's cutting birch bark. That's in early June or July when the bark peels off easily. But for yanking out the spruce roots she uses for structural and design elements, there's no easy time.
You got to pull on it hard. It's not easy work because they're just roots this way. You pull that root and it's underneath, so you got to put it underneath again and it's just all over. My grandmother used to tell me how to find it, you know. And if it's not right, not to touch it, you know.
Unlike her grandmother, Belle isn't teaching others the skills of making birch bark baskets, but she is always challenging herself to make new shapes and new patterns of the trim along the edges.
That's my new one. I just invent that. I do lots of different things. They call me artist, but I don't know, I don't think myself. Maybe somebody else will do that same thing.
Exhibit coordinator Ron and
Owen. It's obvious that a true artist has been at work when you can see a very crudely made item, which would serve the same purpose essentially. But a true artist can take it one step further in making it very special and very distinctive and very unique. Again, it's the value of time, the value of caring, of preparing, of planning, and of putting all of those things together into something that other people can maybe superficially appreciate, because they obviously are not the weaver who knew what the original intent was. But through cultural groups, you can find that there are commonalities in recognition of certain color schemes or of patterns or textures that communicate across members of that culture.
Frank Pangolini.
I try to get weaving in a step further, because I know I'm contemporary, yeah, and I try to take the traditional techniques and apply new techniques to it, whether it be, you know, coming up with miniatures or giant-sized hats. The elder weavers think that, you know, it's because they're very utilitarian. They think, you know, why on earth are you weaving a basket, you know, an inch in diameter? When, you know, what good is it? So it's harder for them to see the ornamental part, whereas with me, I feel that it's taking me one step further than just the, you know, the utilitarian aspects of weaving.
Ron Inoue.
It's quite interesting that whenever you start looking at basketry, you'll find that those three basic techniques of coiling, of plaiting, and of twining are universal. But how people use those techniques with the locally available materials makes all the difference in the world.
Differences that Ron feels people are appreciating once again.
Perhaps it's related to the fact we've all seen Roots on TV and that we are all going through this cultural awareness at all levels. And I think there's greater receptivity on the part of most people to look at things with a much more careful eye, because they themselves are looking at their own cultural roots, be they Native American or be they Jewish or be they whatever. Seemingly, societies are going back to those for looking for values that maybe hold through time.
Pacific Basket Makers, a living tradition, will tour Alaska, the Pacific Islands, and finally San Francisco during the next 2 years. I'm Karen Michelle McPherson. Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.